Surely you have heard the phrase crimes against humanity, but do you know the origin of that term? Nearly 90 years old, the phrase was first used in 1915 to describe the horrors the leaders of Turkey inflicted on the people of Armenia between the 1890s and up until 1915 and beyond. Why is it important to learn about this now? Well, if we can understand what prompts genocide, we can hopefully prevent it. Today, we hear about the genocide that served as a model for all such efforts in the very bloody 20th century. Peter Balakian is an award-winning author and poet who teaches humanities at Colgate University. His latest book is The Burning Tigris, The Armenian Genocide and America's Response. The book covers this truly horrible episode in world history with a focus on how the government and the people of the United States responded. Peter, I got to tell you, the amount of work that must have gone into this book seems prodigious. Just several years in the making, I'm guessing. When did you first decide to delve into this story and write the book?
Well, there's sort of two approaches to that question. I suppose in one sense, I've been dealing with the Armenian genocide as a writer and first as a poet in my work of the 1970s and 1980s. The Armenian genocide has been an inherited history, one that's come down through the trauma of my grandparents' generation to my generation. So that history has always had a forefronted place in my mind. The idea for this particular book, however, really emerged shortly after I finished my memoir, Black Dog of Fate, which was a book about my growing up Armenian-American in the affluent suburbs of northern New Jersey, and then coming to understand my family past. I was on the road with that book when people started handing me texts about American responses to the Armenian massacres of the 1890s. And I started reading, for example, Clara Barton's chapter on her mission to Armenia, and I didn't realize that the first time the Red Cross ever left the United States was to go to Armenia in January of 1896 to do relief work among the then remains of the Abdul Hamid massacres of that period. Some 200,000 Armenians were slaughtered in a two-year period in the mid-1890s. I was astonished to learn the Clara Barton story, and I started digging. And the more I dug, the more I found. The more I found, the more I said to myself, I think there's enough here to write a good book. And it so happens that my scholarly training is in American studies. And although I haven't really done American studies for a while, since my graduate school days, it seemed like an amazing homecoming for me that I could write about the Armenian genocide and America's response. What I discovered shortly into my research was that there was such an intense response to the Armenian massacres of the 1890s and the genocide of the 1915 period that this turned out to be America's first international human rights movement.
Yeah, these are all things I definitely want to cover. You know, much of the journalistic work of the last 100 years or so claims to strive for objectivity. Now, as a person of Armenian heritage, it's likely you can't have that. But is objectivity important, or did your heritage make you feel that you had to investigate every possible lead about the story and the objective bystanders to get the story told?
Well, I always feel that, you know, one's first allegiance is to your role as a scholar, that you have to read a lot of documents, evaluate those documents, assess them. I used hundreds of State Department records, official Foreign Office documents from Great Britain, France, Germany, and mostly from the United States. Official documents in the State Department on the Armenian Genocide. Those are in the National Archives. There's some 3,700 pages of documents written by U.S. consuls who were stationed in the killing fields during the epicenter of the Armenian Genocide. I used hundreds of those documents. I think that, you know, as I would imagine that a Jewish scholar writing about the Holocaust would feel a particular passion about the subject, but at the same time proceed along the methodologies of his or her scholarly training. And that is certainly what I aspire to do always.
A lot of that counselor reporting came from people like Henry Morgenthau and others like that.
That's right. Henry Morgenthau was the ambassador to Turkey between 1913 and 1916. He was the boss of the consuls who were located actually on site in the killing fields. Ambassador Morgenthau was in Constantinople, and he became the crucial conduit, the nexus between the reports coming from people like Leslie Davis in Harpert and Jesse B. Jackson in Aleppo, Oscar Heiser in Trabzon, William Peter in Samson. These were ordinary American guys, young men who had signed up for the Foreign Service hoping they were going to see the excitement of the great wide globe, and they found themselves smack dab in the middle of the century's first genocide as the summer of 1915 broke.
Very interesting point. Similarity between you and Henry Morgenthau is that the Sultan in charge at the time said, "What do you care about these people? They're Christians. You're Jewish." And he said, "Wait a second. I represent America's interest, which is 97% Christian and 3% Jewish."
Exactly. That's really one of the more dramatic moments in the middle part of my book, when Henry Morgenthau confronts Minister of the Interior Talat Pasha, and really puts it to him about the obscenity of the plan to exterminate the Armenians. And Morgenthau makes a very powerful case about international human rights in that conversation, in which he says, "I speak as a human being. I speak beyond races or nations. What you are doing to the Armenian people is barbarous, and the world is outraged." That was Morgenthau's response to Talat's rather ethnic and religious parochialism.
Yeah, yeah. Let's get a sense of what the Armenian culture was like for thousands of years before the first episode of genocide in the late 1800s. It's known as the first nation to adopt Christianity as a state religion back in the year 301.
That's right. It's a very important thing for Armenian identity today that this culture has been enmeshed with Christianity for 1,700 years, and it was the first Christian nation in the world to make Christianity a state religion. And before that, Armenians emerged out of Urartian civilization in the central and eastern plateau of what is today Turkey, Anatolia, in about the 6th century B.C. So this was a civilization living on its historic homeland, you know, much like the Native Americans living on their historic homeland and subjected to genocide. And so this adds a dimension to the Armenian genocide, and also one has to understand the tensions between Christian minorities living in the Ottoman Empire and Muslim Turkish rule over those Christian minorities, because they did something to fuel this combusting situation.
Yeah, that's part of what I want to get into, is that in the early 1800s, American missionaries were quite active in Armenia. They're building schools, churches, and hospitals. Give us a sense of the background of that.
Right. The Protestant missionaries came to Turkey, to the Ottoman Empire, in the early part of the 19th century, hoping to convert Muslims to Christianity. They quickly found out that that wasn't going to happen, that it was just impossible, and any Muslim who showed an interest in another religion would be killed, often by his or her family. They then found that their best customers were going to be the Orthodox Christian cultures, the Greeks, the Assyrians, the Armenians, and in particular the Armenians flocked to the missionary colleges. The Protestant missionaries were often kind of a vanguard group of graduates from East Coast liberal arts colleges, Oberlin, Williams, Yale, Amherst, Middlebury, Colgate, Hamilton, and so forth. These people went over to the Ottoman Empire, built up an impressive network of colleges, and the Armenians flocked to these colleges, and their literacy rate blossomed, much to the dislike of their Muslim neighbors, and they became physicians, lawyers, professors, and so forth. So the missionaries had this big impact on the Armenians in particular in the 19th century, and were responsible for transporting the idea of Armenians back to the United States. In other words, the Armenians became a kind of well-known culture and an admired culture as an ancient sort of Bible land culture, as Victorian Christians would have put it. So that began this synergy between Armenian culture and American culture.
Talking with Peter Balakian, he is the author of The Burning Tigris, The Armenian Genocide, and America's Response. I'm Paul Nelson. Well, what we now call a Protestant work ethic was then well established in the Armenian territory.
Yeah, that's right. I think that the acculturation of Armenians to American things happened in some way in response to the Protestant missionaries. But I would also note that Armenians for centuries had been noted traders and entrepreneurs and people of the book, as the Ottoman authorities did honor them as people of the book.
Yeah. So was it simply religious differences that made the bloody Sultan, Sultan Abdulhamid II, so afraid of Armenians? You suggest in the book that maybe it was his latent Armenianism, the fact that he was Armenian himself, and maybe it was self-hate. You know, we hear this about Hitler, too.
Right. Well, there is speculation in the psycho-historical sense about Abdulhamid's mother perhaps having been Armenian. And the Sultan was paranoid. I mean, he was somebody who wasn't mentally healthy. But I would say that if we're trying to understand the causations of genocide, we always have to look to cofactors. There are always a complicated number of cofactors dovetailing in a particular historical and political circumstance that allow this most hideous of human crimes to occur. And religious factors were important, because one needs to understand that to be a Christian in the Ottoman Empire meant that you were legally and politically designated an infidel, or in Turkish the word is gavur. And to be gavur, to be an infidel, meant you lived at a kind of, what I will make an analogy to, a kind of Jim Crow, a kind of arrangement where you had second-class citizenship. All the Christians of the Ottoman Empire and the Jews had second-class citizenship. They didn't have equal rights in the courtroom. They were taxed differently. They weren't allowed in government or the civil service. They had to do certain acquiescing things when they entertained Muslims in public and so forth. By the latter part of the 19th century, Armenians were among the leaders of the Christian minorities in asking for reform and change.
Tremendous corruption in this empire.
There was a huge amount of corruption in the empire.
So not only are the taxes high, but they come and collect them two or three times, or attempt to.
The tax farming system was notorious.
Tell us about that.
And it bled the Armenian agrarian community so that... there was a tax, you might call it a chain. It's a chain of taxes where an overlord could sell out the right to the next person to collect tax as long as he paid the overlord what he wanted. You could have five or six people in a chain doing tax collection from your farm. It's not so far from sharecropping. At the end of the day, there's nothing left. You've paid out to everybody.
I'm thinking that the gangsters of Chicago and New York had a better system with the protection rackets, a more equitable system, it would seem.
Yeah, you're right. But it's in that arena of gangsterism. Here there were no... godfathers to protect anybody. The Christians were just vulnerable prey. And interestingly enough, the massacres begin in the protest against the tax system. The Armenians in a remote highland place called Sassoon finally said, "We've had it. No more." You know, a little bit like the American colonists against the British. It's funny how taxation always has this money. The pocketbook is always a place that sometimes stirs people to become activists. The Sultan's response to the question that the Armenian minority posed, and the question was this: can a Christian be the equal of a Muslim in the Ottoman Empire? The Armenians asked that question again and again in their agitation for reform and change, and they were met finally with a resounding no, and the no was meted out in wholesale violence. Massacre was the answer to Armenian agitation for change.
Oh boy, it's a pretty hard book to read. I mean, it's well written, but the details are so gruesome, and we'll touch on some of them here.